Welcome to the December-January podcast. NOG hit the ground running after the holidays and held our annual meeting in Washington, D.C., and took part in President Trump's inauguration festivities. On this podcast, our incoming president, Pat Clements, gives us an overview of our annual meeting. Our CEO, Chandler Gould, talks AgBall and Commodity Classic 2025. But first, I have a conversation with Matt Malika from Farmers for Monarchs to talk about the proposed ESA listing for the monarch butterfly.
I'm here with Matt Malika. Matt is the Senior Policy Director with Keystone Policy Center, providing mediation, facilitation, and project management services within Keystone's environment and agricultural practice areas. Most notably, he is a facilitator for Farmers for Monarchs. Thank you for coming on the podcast, Matthew. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Elizabeth.
So can you please explain for our listeners what Farmers for Monarchs is and what your role is with them?
Sure. So Farmers for Monarchs was formed in 2016. And so there are a lot of great pollinator and monarch organizations out there working on conservation, but there wasn't one at the intersection of agriculture and monarch butterfly conservation. And so I think farmers tended to feel like they were getting the finger pointed at them. At the same time, everyone, especially the monarch butterfly, really needed their help. So we were formed to bring together the crop associations with the U.S. government and the other conservation NGOs, with agribusiness, research institutions, all of the organizations that can really play a role in restoring the monarch butterfly habitat and working on the rebound of the species. My role is I'm a facilitator, so I work for the Keystone Policy Center. And I work on agriculture issues, and we're kind of an independent neutral who works on bringing these various groups together to have a positive impact. So we're kind of the farmer-facing monarch conservation organization.
Thanks for explaining that. So towards the end of last year, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service officially proposed to have the monarch butterfly listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. What is Farmers for Monarchs' thoughts on this proposed listing decision?
So Farmers for Monarchs, you know, we've always been what we call agnostic. So we don't take a position on whether the monarch should or should not be listed. Our role is to provide information to farmers on those things that they can do to help the species, most notably planting milkweed and other flowers, being good pesticide stewards, as they always are, not maintaining milkweed stands where they exist, using federal conservation programs to plant more milkweed and other flowers. And so really our role is not to take a position on whether the Endangered Species Act listing is good or bad, but just to be that place of information for farmers.
So is there anything else about the ESA's listing process that you think is important for farmers to know?
Yeah, the interesting thing about the listing that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service proposed is that they knew that it was that the range of the monarch butterfly cut across farmlands, and farmlands are where our food comes from. And so they specifically say in the what's called the 4D rule, which is part of the Endangered Species Act, that farming can continue as normal. There are provisions that about no new farming can happen on naturalized areas, which we're not sure exactly what that means yet, that what's the definition of naturalized areas. But they do specifically say in the 4D rule, and they list all of the ways that farming can continue, that's important, that farming not be impacted. That's something that is really important for your audience to know. And the other thing is that they didn't take a stand, a position, on pesticides. They said, we, in the public comment period, please let us know what you think should be done about pesticides. which is also really interesting. So that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, I think in this way, is taking a very, I'm not sure, farmer-friendly perspective, if you'd say that, but certainly considering farming as an important, you know, part of U.S. Agriculture, of course. And so I think that's really important for your viewers, your audience to understand.
So can you explain in more detail why it is important for wheat growers to make sure that we have, you know, adequate populations of monarch butterflies?
Sure. So, you know, it is an iconic species. And the monarch butterfly in 4 to 5 generations every year will travel throughout the middle of the breadbasket of the U.S., from Canada to Mexico, and land, the great-great-great-granddaughter will land in about the same spot as her predecessor did a year earlier. So just an amazing species, and one that just deserves to live and thrive, and it does so on our ag land. There's also a population in California, but the vast majority of the monarch population migrates through the middle of the U.S. And so it's important in that, you know, the farmers have always been great stewards and conservationists of the land, and will continue to do so.
No, thank you for mentioning that. You know, farmers are, you know, take great pride in being stewards of the land. I know that is one of our big goals here at NOG. So can you also talk to the point of why do you think in general it's important for producers to be engaged in these types of conservation issues, especially when it comes to protecting all types of pollinator animals?
Sure. You know, we're all part of the agricultural system. And so from monarch butterflies, you know, they are a species that have intrinsic value. But other pollinating species really help us for our food supply. And so, you know, the honeybee, for example, pollinates a third of the food that we eat. And so all farmers need to be engaged in having, you know, helping out these important pollinators, whether that is by planting pollinator and monarch forage on some land that may be not as productive, in the ditches, behind the barn, you know, in the flower garden. You know, these are really important places that may be, you know, those edge of field areas that you can make a real difference. Pesticide stewardship. So, you know, if you can spray in the evening or in the morning before pollinators are flying, certainly don't spray when monarchs are migrating through your property. These are just things that that farmers can do, that wheat growers can do, to have a really great impact on not just monarch butterflies, but pollinators across the landscape.
Thank you for going over those. Is there anything you think wheat growers can do, especially if they really want to, you know, help out in any of the efforts that you guys are doing over there at Farmers for Monarchs?
Sure. You know, go check out our website. We have under our state resources tab, we have programs for many, many states, where especially where the monarch migrates, where farmers can enroll in programs to get free seed or reduced cost seed, and information on various programs for technical assistance on how to maintain milkweed stands, and also take part in this Endangered Species Act process. So right now the listing is open for public comment. They've particularly called out farmers as needing a voice in this process. If you follow Farmers for Monarchs over the next month or so, I think it's the process is open until March 15th. We're going to have all of the resources that you need to make an effective comment. So if you go to farmersformonarchs.org, you can find our ESA listing toolkit. that has all of the information you need on making those comments and making the farmer voice heard. But that I think that's really important. So plant milkweed, be good stewards of the environment, as farmers always are, and take part in the Endangered Species Act process, I think is a pretty good starting place now for wheat growers.
Pat, it's great to have you back on the podcast again. You know, NOG has had such a busy beginning, you know, beginning part of the year with our annual meeting and President Trump's inauguration. And very excitingly, the NOG board has elected you to serve as our next president. But before we get into that, I wanted to talk about our annual meeting. So we just had our annual meeting here in Washington, D.C. Can you give our listeners an overview of what we did?
I sure can. And thank you for having me again, Elizabeth. Our annual meeting, all of our meetings, in fact, begin with a series of committee meetings. And we'll hold those beginning on the first half day. First one we have is operations and planning. And they're kind of the logistics department of NOG, I call them. From there, we move on into our DTPC, we call it, domestic and trade policy. We also have environment and ERC committee. And then, of course, we have the all-important budget committee. So those get out of the way. Each of those committees issues a report that is presented at the full board meeting. And we just had really good activities. We spent a full day on the Hill visiting all the congressmen we could get in to see. We kind of focused on some people that we sometimes don't get to see or we felt needed to know what NOG's about, some of the newer Congress members. And that's always a pleasure there. And they were very receptive. They were very kind to us and very, very welcoming. We didn't get blown away by anybody or blown off. And that evening, it's a long day. We start at 8, we go to the Capitol, and we finish up our visits and we start our one of our most enjoyable and educational events while we're there. We have it over at the Senate office building. We call it Wheat 101, and it's a kind of like the freshman course in wheat. And we have, I don't know how many we had, Elizabeth, 12, 15 different representatives from all facets of the industry, from the growers, the millers, the grain elevators, the railroads, the transportation people, flour millers, bakers, and seed people, some university people. And it just brings the whole group together. We get a lot of congressional staff that come over. And this year we were honored to have all four corners. We had a little presentation that outlined the 75th anniversary of the National Association of Wheat Growers. And we were really thrilled to have Representative Congressman Frank Lucas from Oklahoma come over to honor Keith Felty, our outgoing president, who is a native Oklahoman from Altus, Oklahoma. It was a real treat. I know that Congressman Lucas and Keith have worked together for many years to the benefit of the wheat industry. And it was a real honor to have, I know it was a real honor for Keith to have his congressman come over and recognize him for his service to the wheat industry. The other important thing that happens at our winter meeting is we have our annual election of officers who will serve for 1 year. And though it would appear that we all were in some sort of big race, NOG has a very, very efficient system that's gives us some continuity in that each officer moves up one notch, barring a resignation or something that would cause them to not be elected. I've never seen that. So the new person coming on every year is always starts out being the secretary. So this year, our officer elections moved everyone up. I myself am honored perhaps, I don't know if I'm the first president from Kentucky or not, but I'm honored to be serving as president. Keith Felty, our past president of Oklahoma, or our current president, was elected to become the past president. Jamie Kress of Idaho as vice president, Nathan Kane from Montana as treasurer, and our new member of the officer team is Chris Tanner of Kansas, the either number one or number two state most years in wheat production in the nation. So it's an honor to have someone from Kansas, and it's an honor to have Chris. He's a great fellow. We all know him well, and I am looking forward to serving with this officer team, and happy to have Chris Tanner on the team with us.
So when you were at those Hill meetings, you know, you talked a lot about, you know, kind of making sure that you met with those members of Congress to make sure that you let them know what NOG is going to be focused on this year. Can you go into a little more detail about, you know, what NOG's priorities are for 2025?
Well, I'm sad to report they're the same as they have been for the last 2 years. That is to get a farm bill passed. But now that the administration has changed, I do believe we will make progress on getting that this year. That obviously is our number one priority, is to get a bipartisan farm bill passed into law as soon as possible. We also want to see the nominations for the various cabinet level positions that are important to us filled quickly. And they certainly are moving quick on that. I'll give them a big pat on the back for that. USDA, U.S. Trade Representative, and EPA are probably three of the top things that we're concerned with in agriculture. One of our third priority is our tax package. We are essentially small businessmen, and the Trump tax law from 2017, which was very beneficial to small business people and farmers, is set to expire this year. And we hope Congress will be working quickly to pass another tax package. And NOG will be releasing the details of our tax priorities soon, and working with congressmen and senators to explain our needs. We also have ongoing a project called the LCA. Now, the LCA is a life cycle assessment. And we partnered with the National Wheat Foundation and U.S. Wheat, and we have engaged with Texas A&M AgriLife and Colorado State University to conduct a wheat life cycle assessment, which is essentially an assessment of all the environmental impacts of wheat production. And though we have not released it publicly yet, it has been completed and will be being released to the public shortly.
As I mentioned before, the NOG board elected you to serve as our next president. Your term will begin after Quandy Classic in March. You know, we're all very excited about this achievement for you. What are you looking forward to during your presidency?
Well, we've just changed our meeting schedule, and I want to absorb that and get any kinks out of it. We will not be having a board meeting at Commodity Classic. It had become very expensive, somewhat time consuming, and we decided we would try a year without having a board meeting there. As you know, we have a busy winter meeting schedule, not only within NOG, but throughout the agriculture industry. Many, many meetings get jammed into the January through mid-February to 1st of March period. And we thought we'd try letting up the schedule a little bit and see if we couldn't be more efficient with our time and our money. Of course, the other thing I'd be looking forward to doing is getting right up in the weeds with this farm bill. If we can get it in front of either the House or the Senate, hopefully both, I hope to be able to give testimony in support of it and really look at ways to shore up the finances of NOG. The wheat industry is suffering from low prices. We're also experiencing a decline in acres for various reasons. And we are going to have to look at how we are going to use the dollars that we have efficiently and perhaps look for other sources of revenue as well. So I think that should take up the whole year. What do you think?
Oh, no, definitely. That sounds like a very jam-packed year that we all have in front of us. So another big thing that, you know, we mentioned a little bit before earlier is that not that is that all this year NOG will be celebrating our 75th anniversary. You know, as we've been looking back on the past 75 years of NOG, you know, what do you hope is in our organization's future?
I hope that we can become, I hope that we can remain a force for wheat farmers in Washington, D.C. That would be my hope for the future, that we can work for the benefit of wheat farmers, which would benefit all of agriculture.
Chandler, we've had a busy start to our year with our annual meeting and President Trump's inauguration. You know, NOG took part of the inauguration festivities by attending the Agriculture Ball on inauguration night. I know you helped organize this event. Can you tell our listeners more about this event and any highlights that you had from the night?
Sure. So this is the fourth inauguration that I have been on the steering committee for the bipartisan agriculture inaugural ball. And this year, of course, we celebrated the inauguration of President Trump with 1,500 of our closest friends and allies in the agriculture community. We also heard from several members of Congress and key leaders in the agriculture industry, but I really think the highlight was the three different musical performances that we had, with one of them being my former boss, Congressman Colin Peterson. As many people know, he is a singer and a guitar player, and so he joined Blame It on Jane on the stage during the middle of the Black Tie event, and everybody just had a great time in a bipartisan manner celebrating U.S. agriculture as we start this new administration.
No, it was so great to have so many folks from agriculture all gathered again to celebrate President Trump. I definitely was very surprised by Colin Peterson's performance, but no, I think everyone just had such a good time that night.
I think it's just a good reminder that agriculture on and off the Hill continues to be bipartisan, and it was just great to see so many friends from our current and our new friends in the future, but really to get together with those people that we've been working with for the last 20 or 30 years while we've been here in D.C.
So on a different note, coming up this year, you know, we have Commodity Classic 2025 in Denver, Colorado. It's right around the corner. For folks who don't know, what is Commodity Classic and what does NOG have planned for this year's event?
Well, Commodity Classic is by far, I think, the best agriculture trade show that is in the United States. I've been personally attending it for, gosh, over 20 years through multiple different types of job capacity, but it is the largest farmer-owned and farmer-led trade show where if you're wanting to know what is on the future and what is coming up in technology for production agriculture, Commodity Classic is the show that you need to come to. And this year, it's going to be in Denver, Colorado, March 2nd through the 5th. We are literally putting it in the back door of many wheat growers who I know haven't normally attended Commodity Classic in the past. And so since we're bringing the show further west, I'm really hoping that you'll come to the educational sessions and learn about the new technology and listen to the key leaders in agriculture for their speeches, as well as meet some of the up-and-coming companies that have got new initiatives and innovation that might help you become a better and more efficient producer.
You know, what would you say for some producers maybe who haven't been to Commodity Classic yet? Like, why do you think that they need to go, especially this year?
Well, you know, every year we have key people like the Secretary of Agriculture has always come. We have key congressional staff. And of course, with the National Association of Wheat Growers being an affiliate member, we'll have our booth there. We'll be celebrating our 75th anniversary as an advocacy organization for the wheat growers. We will also be celebrating all of our past presidents. Many of them will be showing up and having our press conference. So definitely want the wheat growers, especially in that Colorado and Kansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, Montana, Texas, Oklahoma, that area, to come and attend, and not only to see the trade show, but again, those educational sessions of what's going on and the economics. I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussion about the farm bill. It's just a wonderful opportunity to collaborate with the industries that help you farm, as well as to meet your other farmers from across the country.
So where can folks go to get registered and attend Commodity Classic?
So you can go to commodityclassic.com. Registered there. They'll also help you with hotel registration. And if you're a wheat grower, please select that you are a NOG member. And we look forward to seeing you at the NOG booth in Denver, Colorado at Commodity Classic, March 2nd through the 5th.
Well, thanks, Chandler. All the details for Commodity Classic registration and hotels are in the description of this podcast, and we've also posted about this on NOG social media channels.
Thanks for listening to the December-January podcast. Make sure to keep up with us on social media and our website at wheatworld.org.